Well, just to pick up on that last call before we get to moving on here this hour on Coast to Coast onto the oil spill and how it has the potential, or how could it have the potential of becoming a planet killer? How could any oil spill this big eventually render the planet dead? Before we go there, let me just go back for one second to that last call. Because the person identified a movie that I had never heard of, truthfully, and I thought I'd see a lot of movies. So you hear me talking about. By the way, Toy Story 3, excellent. Although a little dark for kids, I think under about 8. There's a scene in the furnace. I don't even want to tell you, but just it's, oof, it was intense. But anyway. So, I see a lot of movies. I try to see every movie that comes out, but I had never heard of this movie, The Fourth Kind, that she mentioned. She spoke of it, the last caller did, as though it were a documentary. And how come she hadn't heard about it on Coast to Coast if the players involved, the people involved, if the story were true? But it's not, it's a fiction. And The Fourth Kind is a science fiction horror film, stars some actors I love. Will Patton, who was also in Mothman Prophecies, I like him a lot. And Elias Koteas, who's Canadian, I think. He was in Benjamin Button and a couple other really good movies. Anyway, but that's what it is. So that's why you hadn't heard about it on Coast to Coast. The Fourth Kind was a horror fiction film, came out last fall, I guess, and did okay at the box office, made some money, but it wasn't real. So that should help put her mind at rest about the people in the film. All right, that however is not our case here in the Gulf. This is not a fiction, we hope. This is the real potential of being a horror drama that is playing out in front of our eyes if these numbers are right. And that is that we could be looking at billions of gallons of oil spilling out over the next 2 years before this runs out. If we don't shut it down, we'll have that much oil coming out of that hole. And then what happens to that hole, as people were speculating about last half hour? Does it get filled back up again with seawater? Would that happen in one fell swoop? Could it create a massive tsunami? Would there be other underground earthquakes, for that matter, just from the vacuum that's left underneath the ocean's floor when all that oil comes out? Could that collapse into a giant sinkhole? Could that create a giant tsunami? What would happen? There's some very scary possibilities about what would happen to our Earth's atmosphere with all of that oil reflecting the light back up off the ocean. With oil floating over, a massive part of the Atlantic and the Gulf. What could happen to our global warming then? We'll talk about that with a guy who's been thinking down this road for a while yet, and we'll ask him how he thinks this could play out to the worst case scenario next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Peter Ward, I sought you out for this show tonight on Coast to Coast. So thank you for making time in what is no doubt a busy schedule.
Thank you for having me, actually. I always love coming on your show. The dialogue I have with your listeners has always been memorable. How about that?
Well, that's good. And tonight will be no different, I'm sure. I said after the show on Sunday night, where the subject came up about how could this oil leak lead to the death of the planet? What could happen from this oil leak? What would be the series of events that would have to happen? And I said, who would be the guy to talk about that? And your name was the first name on the top of the list. So tell me more about you real quick. NASA astrobiologist. That's all I know. Are you a professor at a particular college or university?
Yes, I am at the University of Washington. I've been there for, oh my gosh, I got old. 30 years almost. Where's the time gone? Where's the time gone? I guess to describe myself, somebody said, you know, how would you describe yourself? And I always say I'm someone who gets easily bored. So I've studied a lot of different things in my life.
Well, that's a good thing, and especially on this show. So thank you. I was reading the numbers. They're kind of scary. But I understand you're already looking at some scary scenarios for your work on this. So it seems like it will dovetail nicely, although I'm not claiming that this was already the book. This isn't necessarily what you were thinking when you wrote The Flooded Earth, Our Future in a World Without Ice Caps. You weren't doing oil spill scenarios for that book, correct?
No, actually, but it does dovetail. I was simply trying to look. I'm a geologist. I really study deep time. And the level of the sea has gone up and gone down. It's just been one of these natural up and down things. But our society is really predicated on let's not let sea level change an inch. And if you start thinking about all those ships that have to offload grain and even oil, if wharves have to be raised or lowered because the level of the sea goes up or down, that in itself is really expensive. But if we melt all of the ice, we're talking about a 240-foot rise in the level of the sea. I've been in Antarctica twice in the last 2 years, and I've been down there watching that stuff melt. It's just phenomenal how fast it's going away. And we are looking at a very rapidly rising ocean. However, what's happening in the Gulf right now kind of puts, that's the long term, the rise of the ocean. What's happening in the Gulf is right now.
Yeah. So, okay. So I was reading some numbers earlier from an Associated Press piece that ran, and I thought what was so interesting about it was just how much they lay it out. So let me just run this by you, and then you tell me what you hear in this. Okay. The BP CEO, Tony Hayward, says the reservoir that feeds the gushing well in the Gulf of Mexico probably still holds 2 billion gallons of oil. He estimated that the reservoir tapped by the out-of-control well holds at least 50 million barrels, so at 42 gallons per barrel, that's 2.1 billion gallons, and that it could be running out over 2 years, the next 2 years. If that much oil gets into the ocean, what could happen?
Well, certainly, if that much oil gets into the Gulf of Mexico, we're really talking about the entire ecosystems going from Florida all the way across the Gulf, all the way down to Texas. And the way currents work, it's going to wrap right around the Florida Keys and head right up the east coast of the U.S. So nearshore ecosystems are just, they're wiped out. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You're just that much oil settles down on the marine invertebrates and the seaweeds and all the fish, and it doesn't kill the fish, but it kills their young. It really gets them their eggs, and it gets them the plankton especially. And that's what's the biggest scary thing. Oil floats, plankton is really the basic food chain of all the oceans, and it floats too. Plankton meets oil is not a movie you ever want to see because it just chops out the base of the ecosystem. But we really have to think about, let's look at this in context. The biggest single oil spill ever was done by those nasty Iraqis. And that was at the end of the first Iraq war in Kuwait. 520 million gallons of oil that we know about were spilled all along the shoreline of Iraq. Now, the Arabian Sea, which is in contact with that entire region was really wiped out in terms of its life. But again, that's a 500 million gallons. It didn't spread all the rest of the ocean. It was localized. But in the areas where it was, and it still wreaks havoc. That place is dead, and it remains dead. And that's what we have to look at in this Gulf area. People think, next year, it's like a hurricane, we'll rebuild. You don't rebuild ecosystems, not for decades or centuries.
Okay, so first thing then, it would kill the food source at the bottom of the food chain on which many species would depend. So we could see right away just that the massive die-off of an entire ecosystem area on the shore, along the wetlands, all of that area. What would be the next thing that would trigger?
Well, you've got not just those ecosystems, but again, coral reefs are really shallow water things. And the prevailing currents, again, will take it all the way down the coast of Florida, heading south. And then you hit the reef tract. You've got the Florida reef tract, and right off it, you've got the Bahamas, and you've got the the Caribbean region. That much oil is going to spread out. And let's just say that we have a really nice hurricane, which hurricanes do come, coming quickly, that helps spread it out even more. You're really killing structures, coral reef structures, that are thousands of years old. In some cases, these ecosystems are millions of years in age. So what you're doing is you're producing a very localized mass extinction. This is equivalent to an asteroid hitting that region, not as big as the dinosaur killer. This isn't going to be like a 200-mile-wide crater that killed the dinosaurs, but this is equivalent to, say, a 2-mile diameter rock hitting that region. The death and destruction would be equivalent to that.
Okay. So last week we were talking about how one potential aspect of this is that if the oil floating on the surface would create a reflector that would prevent the light from the sun to heat the oceans and to heat the currents that have been feeding, you know, obviously not just those of us here in North America, but would circle all the way around, all the way up to Greenland, to Africa. It would affect everybody along the way of those warm water currents. And suddenly those would cool because they wouldn't be able to absorb the sun's rays. Where are you with that?
I don't think so. I mean, all the pictures that I've seen, you know, they fly over it. You see that brown in the water. And the problem that this will do is actually quite the opposite. This will increase global warming. Dark ocean absorbs heat. It's when you have ice caps and ice sheets and anything white that reflects sunlight back into space. This is going to take up heat. And it's doing it in two ways. I mean, number one, you've got darker ocean. Oil is darker than clear water itself. It absorbs the heat there. But have you seen the news over the last week? Have you seen what we're doing? We're burning.
Lighting them on fire.
Burning it.
Not a good idea?
Carbon dioxide is going to the atmosphere. This is like, believable.
Right.
We are just putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere faster than X number of power plants. It's just... there goes our carbon credit. I mean, how's Al Gore going to trade away the carbon burn, man?
Maybe that's why he's getting divorced. Is that he's got to pay off for the new carbon credit? But so then you're saying the opposite. You're saying that it would absorb more heat, which would then heat the oceans even further. Then that water follows the same path up to the North Pole. What happens then when this heated, oily water reaches up to the Arctic?
Well, what you've really got going, of course, is that the nice thing, and Art Bell years ago actually was really smart, and he put forward, I think it was the screenplay for The Day After Tomorrow.
Well, it was based on his book.
Yep, and the thermal healing circulation patterns, I mean, it's absolutely true. If you turn off that cold water dropping down, cold water holds a lot more oxygen than warm water. And what I do during my day job is I study past mass extinctions. And while everybody likes to blame asteroids, and I just invoked it a few minutes ago, actually it's global warming that has caused 4 of the 5 biggest mass extinctions. If you have warm water going up there, in fact, less oxygen drops to the bottom of the sea. And over time, your sea bottoms, the deep Atlantic oceans, lose their oxygen. And animals need oxygen. You're killing the bottom of the oceans, and this is simply speeding it up. And the second thing it's doing is going right back to the book I just wrote, The Flooded Earth, is that this is going to warm up and more rapidly melt Greenland. Now, if Greenland, all the ice on Greenland melts, we go up 24 feet of sea level, and a lot of people's beautiful waterfront houses become underwater parks, and a lot of view houses become waterfront. But I'll tell you, the financial burden of even 3 feet of sea level change is astronomical.
Well, okay, so then our first thought would be, again, I'm just, pardon me for trying to corral you into a sequence on this, but it's part of how I'm trying to understand how one thing could lead to another. So the next thing we would be concerned about is not this warmed, superheated ocean water with the oil mix going to the Arctic per se. It would be going to Greenland. That would be the first victim?
Yeah, but there's an even scarier victim. I mean, you're absolutely correct about this, and this is right sort of the way we have to think. But there's something that people probably haven't thought of, and was just brought to my attention actually about 2 weeks ago. I got an email from an oil engineer. I was on a program called TED. It's just TED is this really interesting group where once a year they bring people to talk to other people. And the people in the audiences are generally the CEOs of the Microsofts and all those guys. They go once a year to college. At the TED Talks, there's been a number of really interesting talks about the effect of hydrogen sulfide, H2S. It's the stuff that makes flatulence. It's the stuff that makes rotten eggs smell rotten.
Right.
Oil breaks down to hydrogen sulfide. A number of us, including my own laboratory, for 2 years we've been trying to figure out what does hydrogen sulfide do to marine creatures, and it's devastating. 200 parts per million. So let's just say you and I are sitting in the same room. That'd be fun. But anyway, I'd love to talk to you.
Not if there's a lot of hydrogen sulfide, though, in that room. Do we want to be in that room?
Yeah, it's just if you have...
Wouldn't you be looking at each other going, is that you or is that me? What do they...
Here's how dangerous it is. Let's just say if there's a million molecules of air, so all around us are millions of little air molecules, right?
Right.
Out of that million, if 200 out of a million are hydrogen sulfide, we're dead. You and I can detect one part per million hydrogen sulfide. Our noses are so good. One molecule in a million is enough to tell us that that guy's been eating chili and beans because it is so poisonous. So 200 parts per million will kill you. The oil that's going in there is going into those swamps, and it's going to land in that sediment. The first degradation process, oil gets attacked by microbes. The microbes, one of the first things they produce is hydrogen sulfide. We're really looking at a brand new point source pollution that's scary. It's really scary. The reason we got into it, and I got interested 2 years ago, is that Washington State, where I live, we're the home of logging for centuries now. And these old logging mills were dumping their wood and wood chips, wood products for years. They've been down in the sediment long enough to start rotting. And we're getting these plumes of hydrogen sulfide. If you're a well driller now, if you drill for groundwater, you have to take a course and you have to have a hydrogen sulfide detector because people are getting killed now. They start drilling for water and H2S comes up and kills them fast. This is the totally unknown, but the scariest part of this is that we're going to be producing in that entire region these hydrogen sulfide plumes for years and years.
And that's the regions here we're back to talking about are along the Gulf Coast and then up along the Atlantic Coast.
Absolutely. And all of those swamps, because it washes into the swamps, gets covered in the sediment. You think it's gone, but it's not gone, and you start producing this H2S. It's really a scary prospect.
So the hydrogen sulfide then would be further exacerbated if they put more of these these oil chewing microbes into the water, right? That was one of the plans that they're trying right now to come up with enough microbes to break up the oil. But it sounds like those two would be producing more hydrogen sulfide.
Yeah, some microbes do, some don't. But in this particular case, the places where it's scary is if you can get it in the water column, you're probably okay. But one of my colleagues who really started this said, what we really absolutely have to do now is start pumping millions of gallons of water into the sea around where the spill is. All that petroleum was just sitting on the bottom. This is the heavy crude. It's sitting down there. And we need to actually ventilate that entire area on a gigantic scale, because otherwise the hydrogen sulfide production coming out of there is going to cause an enormous, that entire region will become a dead zone. We're talking a huge portion of the Earth's crust with the seabed above it, a dead zone.
And more devastation than the $20 billion put aside by BP could repair.
Come on. This is that's like lighting a cigar with a $5 bill. We're just talking about a lot more money.
Okay. Well, we'll pick it up right here. And thank you again, Professor Peter Ward. We're talking about the potential death of the planet that could come if, to pardon the term, the planets lined up just wrong on this oil spill out of the Gulf of Mexico. And we're just getting started. So we're already talking about the death of an ecosystem around the Gulf Coast or on the Atlantic coast. And we were just getting up to Greenland. And then I want to keep following it around the rim of the Atlantic Ocean, too, and what happens next and just how these dominoes could start falling coming up in front of our eyes on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm taking notes. Very interesting to me. Dr. Peter Ward, a professor at the University of Washington and a NASA astrobiologist. I think I got that right. On the flooded Earth, our future in a world without ice caps. Now, that's his book. And it was just talking about kind of like the end result of what if the polar caps melt. We're taking it kind of in a different direction, asking him to take his expertise and focus on the oil spill in the Gulf. And we're just getting started on what happens if this oil leak can't be fixed. How many more gallons of oil, how many more barrels would it take for this to become a planet killer? How long would that process take, and what would it look like next? On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Professor Peter Ward, let me attack this from a slightly different position. Let me just back up a little bit, okay?
Yep, go for it.
If the oil spill in the Gulf stopped tomorrow, what would there be kind of a negligible effect? I mean, there'd be something, but if it stopped tomorrow, how bad would the impact be, do you think, leading eventually to something as terrible as, say, you know, the flooded Earth?
Well, I mean, we can look at the lessons that we've had, and let's look at the Exxon Valdez. That was 10 million gallons. I mean, this thing is putting out, it's really hard to get great numbers, isn't it? I mean, they just, you keep going around and around and around.
Sure.
Interestingly, I was on this program, you weren't there, but I was on this program with George the day three of this spill, and I put out there that I thought this thing was way more than anybody was saying, and then some of your listeners attacked me on email saying, you're an alarmist. So I was way under in my initial estimates.
Right.
You know,
right.
We're looking at 2.5 million gallons a day, it's looking like here. So this is like in 4 days. This is what the Exxon Valdez was. And if we look at the sound where that happened up in Alaska, that it's still not right up there. And that was just 10 million. But 10 million is going to be just a drop in the bucket for this thing. You're right. This could easily go to a billion gallons.
They're saying two. I mean, CEO Tony Hayward, using the numbers that he's talking about, it could easily hit 2 billion. But let me push you again on that question. So if it ended tomorrow, there would be an impact, but it wouldn't, and people would suffer, and their livelihoods would suffer, but it wouldn't be a problem. How many more days of Exxon Valdez's would it take? Would it take 100 more Exxon Valdez's? How many more would it take for it to start to have the truly dire consequences that you're talking about, with all of this hydrogen sulfide, the death to the coastal ecosystem, all of that?
Well, I guess I'd split it up in two ways. As a scientist, a couple more weeks of this, and we've got, I'm in real dire business. But look at it as a humanist. It's already the end of the world for so many people down there. I mean, so many. I know a lot of people down there. My heart goes out to these people. This is the end of the world for so many of them. It's like we've killed the oceans. It's like we've done the hydrogen sulfide. It's as bad as any of us can imagine when your small business goes out, when you can't pay your mortgage.
No, I really get that.
It is the end of the world.
I get that in a figurative sense, but I'm also trying to push you just as a scientist. So how many more months of this leak before we start to get to a tipping point where it really would start to kill the entire coastal area as you described it?
Well, if they pump out the entire reservoir, and again, this guy, Tony, he says he's a geologist, but he's been an administrator for 10 years. Their guess is between 1 to 2 billion gallons are in reserve in this thing, but really nobody knows. If it is connected to other big reserves down there, it could go on for quite a while. Now, there's so much money going up into this water, you know that company is going to do their darndest. I don't really think they care about the environment. BP has shown they don't care. They care about the money that's going up into the water column. So they're going to do their darndest to put in those three wells around it, which will reduce the pressure. I mean, this whole thing is about reducing the pressure around this thing. I heard on the promo you're talking about, if we suck all that oil out, is it going to lead a big void? You think if you had a billion gallons of liquid moving out of rock, that would be a giant cavern down there. But it really, there's so much pressure on this stuff. It's very much equivalent to, have you ever gotten a Slurpee? It's full of ice.
Right.
I mean, you suck all the liquid out of that. The ice is still there, but all the sweet stuff is gone. Well, it's just like being a Slurpee. The oil is the sweet stuff, and this thing is sucking all the liquid out. But the ice is like the rock; it stays there. There'll be no cavern.
Well, they won't be. They won't. There's no chance of it collapsing.
No, that can't.
Not like
happen.
Not like a sinkhole. Once it, like an aquifer that runs out of water and eventually, you know, turns into a sinkhole or something.
Nope, it's just that's not going to happen. And the nice thing is that that particular area, the geological region that it's in, it's mostly flat-lying strata. So you're not going to have that sort of catastrophe. But it's bad enough, this whole hydrogen sulfide stuff, it's however bad you want to portray things, it's worse.
Okay.
I mean, it's just beyond belief to me what's going on down there.
Well, and let me say, I'm going to continue to try to push you into it's worse. So how many miles off of the coast would it be worse? Even if they get the oil wells up that can start to drain the pressure from the leak, if it continues to leak both out of the main hole that it is now and then all of these other fissures that are on the bottom, which we don't have cameras on, which we're not seeing the oil come out of, but we know are there because scientists have seen it and have already reported it. How far off of the coast would the ecosystem be killed? How far out into the ocean would you have to go back to at least a reasonable living environment?
Well, ecosystems, again, in the ocean are on the bottom and above the bottom. And this is all a question of, you've got the light stuff floats. But what's scaring me most about this whole thing is that all this oil coming out, we're seeing a lot of oil on the surface. We're seeing a lot of it wash up. We're seeing about 1%. I think, of what's coming out there, washing up on shore. Now, a lot of it hasn't got there yet, but we are producing the biggest pools of liquid oil in the history of humankind sitting on the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. You know, the scientists keep saying this stuff has been gone laterally. The heavy stuff is sitting down there like this. Remember the old movie, The Blob? Well, this is a giant oily blob that is tens of miles in length now and keeps growing. This stuff sits on bottoms. It does not let oxygen hit the sea bottoms. Wherever it sits, it's killed every single animal underneath it. So it is like a giant eraser, sort of erasing the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico of all life. So you are already out of visibility, causing one of the major mass extinctions, certainly the biggest mass extinction of the last 2 million years, without doubt, is already happening down there. And here's what scares me. You want me to go scary? I can go scary for you if you want my worst fears.
This is what I'm really trying to get to, is so that we have, at least we can see, what do they call that, the on the horizon line. I want to look out there to that point where it all comes together at its worst.
All right. Here's the worst thing that I could see. And again, this is just a guy sitting in his office in midnight in Seattle, Washington. But there was a very scary couple of papers by an engineer at Northwestern about 10 years ago, a guy named Gregory Riskin. And Riskin has been studying the effects of methane. Methane, as you know, is a very, very flammable gas. The Black Sea has so much methane in solution down near the bottom that his worry was this stuff would come out of solution like a great big burp. Now, we know that this can happen. It happened in a lake in Africa, Lake Nyos in Cameroon in 1980. It wasn't methane this time, it was carbon dioxide. But a lot of carbon dioxide dissolved in lake water. In one night, it came out as a big bubble of carbon dioxide, and it killed 2,500 people. The physics is exactly the same. And Riskin said, if we get a big bubble of methane coming out of the Black Sea, the stuff comes into the air and a lightning would blow it up in a gigantic explosion. And he had this vision of part of China disappearing in an enormous flash. Well, my vision is Miami disappearing in a methane explosion.
Wow.
Yeah, well, there you are. And there's some good science behind this. I haven't seen this out there yet, but this is my, you want it scary? That's my scariest thought.
Well, I'm looking for worst case scenario. So this is
That's pretty bad. People burned up,
and this would be because the methane bubble would be created west of Miami in the Gulf of Mexico, or just off the coast of Miami. Where would this happen?
Great big bubble, the whole Gulf of Mexico. But because of prevailing winds, things always turn to the right up there. So what you would have is, if you got one of these big bubbles, it would float onto Florida. And float the biggest, obviously the biggest population center is down in South Florida, but you can probably hit the middle part of Florida.
Well, you get Tampa, St. Pete. You get
any of them. And
you
the
get
big, yeah.
Orlando. Yeah, you
Just
get
goodbye.
Gainesville.
And how would that play out in the news? You know, no one. First of all, they would probably think that somebody hit us with an atomic bomb. We might end up shooting nukes at somebody else. They would think for sure it was terrorism. This is one of those deals where nobody would see it coming. And no one would know until way later exactly what happened. And yet it's totally possible.
And at the risk of sounding flip, we're talking about really about a big giant fart that ate Florida.
Well, methane isn't so much fart. Methane is actually odorless. You can't smell it.
I'm not saying you can't. I'm not calling it that. But that's where I realize that methane is odorless. But that's essentially what we're talking about. Something decomposing that comes up in a big giant. In a big methane bubble, and then floats over and eats Florida.
Well, certainly all you need is lightning to hit it. And I've lived in Miami a while, and there's a lot of lightning down there.
Mm. And it would take a lightning bolt over Miami, and it would light it all the way back to Tampa, St. Pete.
Probably.
It would be a massive, burning of that all simultaneously.
It's pretty scary.
That's fascinating and very scary, and don't mean to sound as though that would be funny or anything, so I was trying to find a way to just kind of put it into casual terms. And as this methane bubble could happen there, it could also happen if, as you're saying, this is going all the way up the East Coast, right? If you've got if this decomposition, as you talk about, goes around Florida and starts coming up the East Coast on the way up to the Arctic, this could happen anywhere.
I don't think so. I think mostly if you're going to have a really nasty disaster, it's going to be because all that oil is sitting in the Gulf of Mexico itself. It would come out of solution. Winds would blow it apart. It would dissipate to the point it wouldn't be explosive. Now, the Riskin work said that it can't go very far, but because of the size of the oil plumes and the position of Miami and southern Florida, it just seems to me that's the place that would get it.
Interesting. So, all right, so when we last left it, as you were describing it, We could see the oil continuing to spill out, maybe as many as 2 billion gallons of oil going into the ocean over the next 2 years if they don't find a way to stop it. If their estimates are right, and as you say, they could end up being wrong by two-thirds. It could end up being three times bigger than they're estimating.
Or one-third the size. But, yeah, I mean, we really have no good handle on this thing.
So it could go all the way up to, and you said you were worried about what would happen if it reached all the way up to and continued to exacerbate the melting of the ice in Greenland. What about the North Pole? Would this affect the North Pole meltage, which we know already has been happening at a greater rate than ever?
Oh, yeah. Anything. The world's oceans are connected. The world's atmosphere is connected. When you have heating in the tropics, and this is certainly a tropical area compared to the North Pole, it gets exported up there. Heating down here just simply increases the heating that goes on up there. What really surprised the heck out of me being in Antarctica was how warm it had gotten compared to seasonally older temperatures. And we were able to see historic positions of glaciers that had just were walking away. So this warming is no joke. I mean, the warming that's taking place now has no precedent in the geological past. There's never been carbon dioxide going up as fast as it has done in the last 200 years, never in Earth history.
So how soon might we see an effect, again, worst case scenario, of this petroleum as it comes all the way around the coast of Florida, and if it went up to the Arctic, how soon might we see it have an effect on the Arctic ice cap?
These things are the rate in which oceans change and ocean movements over the next couple of years. I mean, it isn't an instantaneous type thing, but it is.
Right.
It is just one more. Maybe this is the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, we are heading towards the tipping point. And none of us really know exactly where that tipping point is in terms of either global temperature or carbon dioxide levels. But this is an unprecedented disaster. I mean, this is coming at a time when we already have our hands full. And just when I saw that burning and I saw all that new CO2 going up, it just sort of broke my heart.
Yeah, but it could. So sometime within the next 2 years, then we could see it affecting the Arctic meltage as well as Greenland. What happens when it gets, you know, tractored around to Europe?
Well, again, there's going to be so much dilution by then. I really don't think, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's going to go to Europe. I don't think so. I really think the way the currents work and the way things are down there, most of this oil is going to wash up on the Gulf shoreline. Not a lot's going to get around that corner. But that's almost the problem with this. You'd almost rather it had more potential to escape out of that. That whole Gulf of Mexico area, it's just like a, it could be like a big, nasty bathtub. Wait till you see the ring on this bathtub.
Well, okay, good, helpful to know. So, but if that kills the ecosystem of the whole Gulf, let's say that the dissolution of the oil, even if 2 billion gallons worth escapes into the environment,
yep.
And it gets only as far as Greenland, Northern Europe remains unaffected directly by the oil leak. And it would only be fair, it would seem, if the BP leak made it all the way to Britain. But anyway, so it kills the ecosystem of the Gulf. How would that affect, what would be the next domino to fall in the ecosystem of the greater Atlantic?
Well, I think what you have to worry about most is the fact that we are, as an entire planet and a planet of people, that we are barely keeping ourselves fed, that a whole lot of that feeding is coming from fish and marine life. We are shooting up population-wise. I mean, this is the spookiest thing of my life that I've seen, at least in terms of human history. You know, where are we at? 6.6 billion now. We're heading towards 9 billion by 2050, 2060. So we're going to go up a third in size and population. And the spookiest deal about the flooding of the continents is that you only have to raise sea level about 3 feet to remove about 10 to 20% of human agriculture. It's unbelievable how much we grow within 3 feet of the shoreline in terms of elevation. Almost all the rice, all the deltas, all the tropical areas where low-level rice is formed, 3 feet of sea level rise kills all that. So this is anything that causes the glaciers and the ice caps to melt faster is just going to really hurt us as a population.
But that would hurt then, to go back to what you said before, that would hurt Europe. It would just wouldn't hurt it directly in the sense that they were getting the petroleum, but it can't be that the water is just rising on the western side of the Atlantic.
It's everywhere. No.
Right.
We all get it. And we're one
right.
global ocean. And believe me, because we're one global economy now, anybody who suffers lower food, it affects everything. Look what happened when we started turning all that corn over to biodiesel about 2 years ago. Within 6 months of that, we were having riots in the third world because of the domino effect that just the U.S. not exporting its corn anymore but using it for biofuel, the whole world got hit by that. Just one effect in the U.S., and we're all interconnected in
okay.
so many ways economically.
All right, but what about the sea levels of places like Iceland, or the UK? How much would be left if the oceans rise, say, 3 feet?
Well, you've certainly removed a lot of shoreline that's there now. Again, they say economics is the dismal science. So we're going to have a 3 foot sea level rise over the next 50 years. There's no getting around it. CNN just did a study. They say, what would a 3 foot sea level rise due to the cost of all the wharves and all the docks and all the undocking facilities in the world.
And well, then hang on. You got to give me the answer coming up in just a minute. We'll start right there. What would be the answer to that question? What would be the effect of that 3 foot rise? We'll talk about that with Professor Peter Ward. The flooded Earth, our future in a world without ice caps. This time we're attacking it from the standpoint of the Gulf of Mexico oil leak and how the domino effect would take so many lives and so many livelihoods next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.